Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome everyone to another episode of Brainstorm Brewery, episode 47 here. We got a grab bag of letters. I guess people finally responding after they hear that we respond to your letters. So I guess keep them coming, because as long as you send them, we're going to keep on reading them.
All right, so let's jump into our first email here. We've got a number of them to go through this week, and we're glad you guys are sending us some feedback. So let's start with Charles Weber's email to us. He says, guys, I love the podcast, and you killed me a while back on your What's It Worth section when you had the foil full art mutavaults. I have a lot of cards, but I've never seen one of these in the wild before until I acquired four of the damn things after seeing how pretty it was after doing some research. If I can read, that goes a lot better there. But yeah, Chris, thanks. That's one of the reasons why we do What's It Worth, is because it's a lot of fun to highlight stuff like that. And one day, I will even have those mutavaults myself.
Yeah, that's why we do What's It Worth, so someone can say, hey, you guys talked about a car and I dropped $2,000 because I have $2,000 laying around.
That's not what I do What's It Worth for, but, you know, that's fine.
I mean, thanks, Charles. Thanks for making me feel poor. I appreciate it.
It's fine.
I'm just sad now because it's four fewer mutavaults out there for me to get. So if he's not getting rid of his, it's going to make the price go up just a little bit more. For one day, I'll get around to owning these.
That's true. Yeah. I'm probably just bitter because I was never given the chance to win one, which is all I really wanted.
Yeah.
But it's okay. I got my Texas Foil Groundbreaker, my playmat with no backing, and 34 booster packs.
Hey, that's better than I got at that time, since I didn't even play Magic then.
I don't know. It's mostly whenever I play Two-Headed Giant with a God Slayer, we just open ridiculous.
It's true. You guys do seem to have
our decks at that
luck.
Event were just obscene.
For those of you at home, the God Slayer is a friend of the cast. Aaron, the God Slayer.
Sula. Aaron Sula. Yes. We call him the God Slayer. He won the God Slayer tournament, which I guess was the first quote-unquote Worlds of Ascension at Gen Con. So he won the, basically they make a card out of you if you won that tournament. So,
yeah, so
Aaron the God Slayer. What expansion is that, Aaron? Or Ryan?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know. There's been so many
Storm
of them.
Storm of Souls or something. Like, anyway.
Something like that,
There's a card called Aaron the God Slayer. That's actually him, because he won a tournament at Gen Con. So, he's our old Magic buddy, too. He just, you know, branched into Ascension also. So, that's why we call him the God Slayer, because that's a pretty big accomplishment.
I agree. It's pretty sweet.
All right, so let's jump into the next email here from Nathan Klein. He says to us, so here is my loaded question.
Hey, do you really want to read this, Corbin?
I don't know. I haven't read it yet.
I think you're fired, actually. You botched that last one. Let me give this one a shot, all right?
All right. All right.
That seems like a good idea based on what's in it.
Nathan Klein, so here's my loaded question. Do any of you engage in the buying/selling/trading of MTG peripherals such as tokens? If so, where do you get the most value for selling them off? I'm curious to hear any thoughts on MTG product that falls within this extra stuff category. I realize that old border tokens and promo tokens are fairly rare and valuable, but I couldn't imagine modern border tokens being worth anything. Well, Nathan Klein, I can give you some examples of modern border tokens being worth anything. There are the Wormcoil Engine tokens, which were like $5 a piece at some point, and are still legit because they weren't in every booster.
Yep.
They were actually, like, as far as tokens go, they were a little bit rarer.
There's the Godsire token.
The Godsire token. There are Germ tokens. There's the Sarah Avatar.
Yeah.
Even the
Eldrazi spawn tokens.
Eldrazi spawn tokens. That's
they're
that's
used a ton in EDH, and those are the kind of cards that like you said, they're just not in every pack.
Yeah, I have a big pile of
those. If you want Eldrazi spawn tokens, you want a lot of them because you're probably playing an early. What's that card? The thing with the guy.
Glittering Invasion makes seven.
Yeah, there's a ton of them to do. Even like Kozilek Predator.
There's that green enchantment that spits one out of turn. I can't.
Oh
think
yeah,
of
Eldrazi. No. Awakening Zone. We suck.
This is even harder than What's It Worth. Like, what's the name of this card? It's. Yeah. I wouldn't say it's Alarm something, but it's.
It's Awakening Zone.
Yeah, Awakening Zone.
Awakening Zone. We're doing all kinds of terrible tonight.
So yeah, those Eldrazi ones are worth, I think I did a, financial tip of the day the other day when I found this out on Twitter that they're worth actually like 50 cents a piece.
They're quite a few tokens. And you know, the best part is I don't engage in the buying and selling of them necessarily. I will acquire them in collections all the time. Anytime you buy a collection, people are like, well, here's a billion throw-in tokens. You pick through there. Like, anyone's like, hey, I gotta apologize, there's some unglued cards in this collection. A guy actually said that to me this week. And, the goblin tokens are like 4 or 5 on eBay, the squirrels are like 6 or 7, the zombies are like 2 or 3. Like, the Pegasi, soldiers, like, those unglued tokens are legit. And that's not the modern stuff. But, I mean, you will get all kinds of stuff when you buy collections.
And the, yeah, and you also get these trap leftovers because people just throw them out. I mean, it's not costing you anything except, maybe a box to keep them in. You don't know which token's going to be. Like Godsire at the time, it's hard to guess that that token would be worth, anything. But it doesn't hurt you anything to pick it up from the draft leftovers and throw them in a box at home and then sort through them a few years down the road.
And emblems.
Free money. And that's emblems. The next thing I was going to touch on, yeah.
Like you'll find those on tables in Draft Chap, Yeah, those emblems are legit too, and those are anything that goes to one specific card. If that card's playable, then they're gonna need that token as well.
And what was the first emblem printed? Do we know the price of have those gone up?
They were pretty, the whole concept of the emblem was not even introduced until Elspeth versus Tezzeret dual deck,
I think.
Right.
And I think
Elspeth to say, emblem.
Right.
So I think that was the first time they had them. And then the Sorin versus,
Sybil.
No, what am I thinking? Elspeth versus, Koth versus Spencer. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Koth Spencer that also had the, I can't think of the name of anything tonight.
I remember the Sorin token after it came out. I remember trading these at $4 to $5, so they legitimately were worth that much. And they've come down since then, but people want these.
You get one per box on those. You get one per box, and you know what? Like, if you play Sorin, you'll want the emblem, so they actually have real value. And the Eldrazi spawn were common as dirt, but how many booster packs are being opened of Rise of the Eldrazi right now?
Eldrazi sealed product is worth quite a bit, so very few.
Exactly. So there's actually a lot of stuff. Anything that says Magic the Gathering on it will sell.
That is one lesson I've learned being in this game long enough, is just pick it all up. You want it all.
And people would be like, oh, what about those other crap? I'm like, well, I'll give you an extra $5 on the collection and just throw all that crap in. Because people, what are they going to do with a bunch of empty deck boxes and tokens once you buy their cards? They're throwing all that stuff in.
Yeah, I actually have
these deck boxes, completely empty, revised deck boxes on eBay.
Yeah, and, I have enough.
Like, anything that says Magic the Gathering on it is going to sell because people love this game.
Right. Tokens,
counters from Duelist Magazine, like
binders, like you get everything.
Yeah, and it's all worth money. eBay is a very excellent out for that stuff. But a lot of the stores, like I know Cool Stuff and Troll and Toad, two companies that pay very good on spin downs.
Mm-hmm.
I have a tendency to sell to Troll and Toad because I have a relationship with them, but I want to say that Cool Stuff pays pretty well on spin down, the 20-sider spin-down life dice. All kind of stuff like that, you'll just get in collections and you'll accumulate it, and then you'll go back through and you're like, wow, I think this is funny. Like I'll just take a box of spin-downs to a GP with me, and just some of those are worth, $5-$10 on a buy list.
Yeah.
Stuff's great.
Anything Magic-related is going to have a value because people will need it. God, even the dividers that came in the Christmas set I've seen sell on eBay. So you never really know. So just pick all, the more collections you buy, the more of that stuff you'll have. I actually have a 5-row box jammed with folded up deck boxes that I gotta go back through and see if any of those are worth anything. Just all kind of stuff I've got acquiring collections.
You just don't throw anything away.
Free money. Never throw anything out. Exactly. It's free money, and eBay's a good out for that because the kind of people that are, looking for that kind of stuff, that's the first place they'll go.
Yeah. All right, so now you give a shout-out to Daniel Bay and King Don also send us emails. And, I know we can't touch on all the emails we get every week or everything everyone asks, but both of them ask about bulk. And, they have a bunch of bulk. What is the best way to get rid of that bulk? I assume, on the one hand, there's bulk rares, but then there's also just you know, bulk commons and uncommons or bulk uncommons, all these things, you know. So what's the best out for getting rid of those? And do you really, is it really worth the effort to do repacks of them and, like, say, you know, put 500 green cards together or, you know, some from a particular set together if it's still just bulk? Or is it better off just outing it all? You know, what do you guys fall on that?
I think this is a great subject because I think it really depends on your outlet. Like, for me, I buy bulk at the same price I sell bulk for. I will happily buy bulk at $5 a thousand. We're talking about commons on commons here. And I will happily sell bulk at $5 a thousand. If I can get more, like I have a show coming up, I'm gonna make some pre-made boxes that are, you know, maybe $20, $25 for, like, you know, 2,000 cards or whatever. Like, you make a little bit more than you would selling it on, you know, to a buy list or just selling to a store in general. But at the same time, like, I just want to get rid of it. I can get so much of it, I just want to move it as quick as I can, because what you really want out of that bulk is the picks. And so, I mean, I just move it as fast as possible. I don't think it's worth taking extra time and effort, I found in my experiences at least, to go through and actually try and pick everything out.
And Ryan, explain what you mean by the picks. I mean, because it's...
Oh, the cards that are more than bulk. Like, all the time, especially when you buy bulk from competitive players, I actually find that bulk tends to be better than the bulk that you get from, you know, casual players. And a casual player's bulk, you may find a $20 card.
That you say is bulk? Half a cent?
Half a cent, exactly. Well, you're paying $5 a thousand.
You fight over this. I say pick nickels, because it doesn't take more time to pick a nickel, and that adds up really fast. But
you're talking about how deep you pick?
Yeah, but really, like, if it's worth more than half a cent, it's worth picking out. Nothing that's a penny on a buy list. So, like, the minimum is going to be, like, a nickel, and a nickel is going to be a card like, geez, I don't know, like Utopia Sprawl or something like that. It's the stuff that's, like, not worthless, it's worth picking out, and people will pay a nickel on it because they want it. But if you actually go through and divide that stuff up into piles, your nickel pile is going to be gigantic. And you have to decide whether it's worth, you know, a gigantic pile of nickels is still, you know, 20 of those is a dollar, so 2,000 of them is 10 bucks. Is it really worth it? Or 200 of them is 10 bucks. Is it really worth it? So
I will pick them out if it is a desired card. Like, there's a lot of times a card that, like, for example, the Ravnica, the original Ravnica Carews. Like, those go range anywhere from 10 to, you know, 5 to 10 cents, and I will always pick those out because people always want them, as opposed to something that is just, you know, maybe like a really fringe playable card that saw one play in one deck and will never play again. I may not pick that out because I don't want to have 100 copies of that card.
My rule of thumb is when I ship somebody bulk, I don't ship them anything I wouldn't be happy if I were in their position paying a nickel on.
And I mean...
I'd be happy to pay a nickel on this. And so... I'll ship them that so they'll buy bulk for me again in the future.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't want to dick around with nickels, and you just don't want to pick anything less than a dime. It's still worth doing and buy listing that stuff out. But for the most part, like what Ryan says, is if you pay $5 per thousand on bulk and pick it, it's worth your time because you're going to pick the stuff I've gotten in bulk is insane. Like, Ryan.
I pull Spellslayers and Remands and things.
Exactly. So, but not even rares. Like, what's buy list on Imperius Perfect? Elvish Promenade. Oh.
Yeah. Like, and that's what I'm saying. When you pick up the competitive player's bulk, those are the cards you're going to get. Because that was never run in a tournament deck. When you pick up that casual player's bulk, though, like, sometimes that stuff's just void. And it's not that they took out because they knew it was worth money. It's because that's in some deck somewhere. Or, you know, someone else, one of their other buddies needed some elves, so they gave it to them.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually like
actually a wash. Like, I'll always buy bulk, and if you pay exactly on it what you're going to sell it for, you literally can't lose.
Right, which is what I'm saying. I will always happily buy and sell bulk at...
Even if there's zero picks, you're going to break even. And usually you're buying bulk as part of, like, you know, you're also paying them real money on their rares.
All right, so let's switch over to the other side of the question here. If you're a player and you have all of this bulk, you know, is it worth, say you have, like, I think King Gong said he had 25,000 cards in his collection, and, you know, he's got a family and he doesn't have a lot of disposable income, or I assume disposable time. How much, you know, should he pick all of that, or should he bulk it out? And if he does, then what's his best way to sell those cards once he has either picked it or is just bulking it all out together?
A GP is typically where you are going to sell your bulk. It's you know, how much do you value your time? The kind of people who aren't going to pick nickels are the same kind of people that aren't going to, like, put together a lot for eBay that says 500 green cards. They're the type of people that's going to throw an ad up on Craigslist, like, you know, 20,000 bulk cards, come get it. So if you have the kind of time to pick nickels out, you might have the kind of time to say, you know what, here's something I like to see on eBay that a lot of people have had success doing is what they call instant collection. So you're like, well, here's, you know, X commons, X uncommons, X rares. They're all jammed in a box. Give me $50. That'll include shipping and, you know, here you go. So those kind of things move pretty briskly. If it's worth it to you to put those together, you'll be able to get more than half a cent each on bulk commons and uncommons. If it's worth it for you to do that kind of work. And if it's not, I would honestly just jam it in a 5-row box and take all those to GPs and just, you know, sometimes pay a little bit more than $5 per thousand in person. And
right.
You won't have to pay to ship it in. And that's where you lose a lot of your money.
And one thing I would add to that is, you know, maybe you can't make a GP or, you know, whatever circumstances are. Look at it locally. I know there's a chain of shops in the South called Vintage Stock, and it's one of these places that just carries, you know, a bunch of comics, a bunch of old video games, a bunch of DVDs, stuff like that. You know, I'm sure this is not, you know, a particularly unique chain. And they buy cards. They buy bulk at, like, $5 per 800, so, you know, it's a little better than that, too. And that's where I outmine it. And really, the reason I say look locally for those type of places is because of the shipping. You lose so much shipping. So if you're not able to make it to a GP where you also, you know, have the problem of bringing it all in to a convention center and all of that, look locally as well and, you know, ask your shop owner if they buy bulk.
Call around. Ryan and I accidentally stumbled into a place in Illinois that was paying $10 per thousand on commons and uncommons just to get it in. So the backstory on this real quickly is Ryan and I decided that we were going to shop crawl all the way to, I think it was either a GP or an SCG open in Minneapolis. So we called a bunch of shops along the way because we were going to take a whole week to drive there, just stay in hotels the whole way up there. We both wrote articles about it. It was a great time. It was me, Ryan, and the Godslayer just hanging out. Great week vacation. But we were calling shops like, hey, do you guys have any bulk you'd be willing to sell for $5 per thousand? And a lot of shops said, yeah, and we got a lot of bulk on that trip. You know, picked it and then turned it around. But one shop said, no, we actually need your bulk. We're paying $10 per thousand. And it's good to know where those kind of shops are. So call around. You're not going to want to drive 3 states over to do that. But if there's maybe a shop 25, 30 miles away that you had no idea was looking to buy the bulk, you just never know. So it doesn't hurt to call every shop in the radius that you're willing to drive and see what their needs are for bulk. Because, you know, they didn't specify unpicked bulk. So they definitely would have paid $10 per thousand on just the stuff we picked everything good out of. So
right.
That's good to know too. So yeah. If you just do a little research, it doesn't hurt to know who's paying what.
Yeah, and doing that research, another place to look is maybe not necessarily on the bulk, but just while we're talking on the subject of calling around sports card shops, a lot of them, you know, kind of move into Magic because some people want to play, but they don't necessarily know the ins and outs of it and all of this. And I found a sports card shop in my local area that actually pays me a quarter per bulk rare, which is just insane since the going rate is, you know, 10 to 12 cents or whatever. And that's, you know, someplace that you may not think of, but those sports card shops are a good place to look.
The final thing I will say is, you know, we don't want to turn into shills for Cool Stuff Inc. necessarily, but I will say this in all seriousness, Cool Stuff Inc. pays the best on basic land. Cool Stuff Inc. pays the best on sorted just on commons. They pay something like $15 per thousand on uncommons, I think, as long as they're older than Mirrodin.
Yeah, I believe they have to be non-modern sets.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, like they do. And I mean, they actually, it really makes it so that by the time you've paid that shipping cost, it doesn't hurt nearly as much. Plus, you actually make a little bit extra. If you take the extra time and effort, and that's another one of those things, like, I don't have enough time. I move too many cards to go through and separate it out like that, and it wouldn't be worth it for me to pay somebody to do that. However, if somebody else is the kind of person who's just going to slowly move through a collection anyway, and, you know, maybe you only pick up 1,000 cards a month because you just buy one random collection a month when you have some extra money, it's worth picking that out because it does make a difference when you decide to go sell 5,000 cards or 10,000 cards.
It really does. If you're selling 10,000 cards for $15 a K, like, that's legitimate. That's going to pay for your hotel and your gas.
Right. Okay, so let's move on. We got one more email I want to touch on here. And this is from Sander Vanderzee, who has been on here a couple times. He says, hey, Brainstorm Brew Crew, I am late with my follow-up email. Anyhow, I want to tell you about the current European price of Thragtusk, around 7.5 euros, so I would dump them now. And in case you're curious, 7.5 euros is about $9.5 US. So I'm gonna side with Xander and make that my pick of the week, and that is to dump the
draft. Oh, that's Xander Vanderzee's pick of the week, Corbin.
Quit cheating.
I'm going to promote his pick of the week on this show as a good time. If you haven't yet,
that's so brave, Corbin.
And then you're gonna dump your own, and then you're gonna come up with your own pick of the week because we're not letting you get away with this.
Yeah, no kidding, Corbin. Hey guys, my pick of the week is a card that's been printed 4 times, and
And somebody else had to tell me it was correct. Corbin, yeah. You're ashamed of yourself.
I think it's this. What's funny about you guys making fun of this is probably my pick of the week.
Hey, like, guys, you should probably dump your Hellriders too.
This is probably my pick of the week like 2 months ago as a card to get rid of.
It's probably everybody's pick of the week 2 months ago to get rid of.
Anyways, so that is me, or Sander and I's pick of the week.
No, that's Sanders' pick of the week. Probably.
Who wants to go next?
You.
Me. Yes. Me.
You.
Pick a real card.
Pick a real effing card, sir.
Mainly, I'm making you go because I'm still trying to figure out a card.
Right. Well, I'm going to go with a sell call on Prime Speaker Zagana. It spiked, you know, I don't know if it was a week ago or 2 weeks ago now.
It was SCG Indianapolis. That was the marquee card in a deck.
Right, and it popped up a few bucks or however much. And, you know, at the time it was, we don't know if it's going to continue staying tier one and if it's going to keep going up.
It's
leveled off. Yeah, I mean, it's done well, but the price-wise, it's leveled off, and it's probably time to move them if you picked any up.
The problem is people are only going to continue to open Gatecrash, and we haven't even hit Moto Redemption.
Right.
Now, don't know what effect Moto Redemption is going to have because they, you know, quintupled the price from $5 to $25, but I've got to say that introducing more product is only going to negatively affect the prices and bring the price on Zagana down. Even if it maintained its playability right now and was, you know, top 8ing one or two, you know, copies of the deck in the top 8, that doesn't matter. The price is destined to go down.
Right. See Boros Reckoner.
See Boros. Oh, that was my pick of the week, Corbin. See, I'll go next. Aurelius Fury, a card that initially none of us were excited about. When we did our Gatecrash review, we're like, we don't care about Aurelius Fury. Currently, Aurelius Fury is in Abraham Lincoln on eBay. $5. No one cares. We took a lot of flack for undercalling Aurelius Fury. We were not excited initially, and a lot of people said, you guys are morons, you don't know what you're saying.
Sure, they said that.
For set redemption, Aurelius Fury's $5. My buddy Josh Milliken is actually running this in a Jund deck, because he's crazy and mana is easy right now. He says it's really good, but, you know, Zagana's really good, too. It's really, really good. It's a good EDH general. It's the marquee card in a deck called Zagana Bant. You know what? Like, that's going down, too. So, Aurelius Fury is $5 pre-redemption, so read into that what you will. Never hit the 40 more than one person said it was going to hit. Aurelius Fury, it feels almost like cheating because I think every Gatecrash card is going down, but, I mean, Fury's really tanking. If you can get $5 for it right now, I would take the $5.
You know, on that note, just looking ahead, before too much longer, as the redemption hits and we move into Dragon's Maze, we'll probably start to see if some of these cards bottom out. And at that point, you know, you can start identifying cards that may be good prime for a spike after rotation, something like, you know, a $3 Aurelius Fury, just something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I mean, that card, although I don't think it's great, there's no way it's a $3 card either. Like, it does still have potential, and it's going to see some play at some point.
Well, I mean, I would take the money that you would spend to buy $2.50 Aurelius Furies and buy $2.50 Armada Worms or Trostanis. Trostani is an EDH general. Like, it's got casual appeal. The card, I think, is going to have more impact. I would rather scoop cards like Trostani and cards like in Lotlith Troll.
The difference being this to redemption, because for Return of Ravnica, it was still only $5. So, you know, the number of copies out there could be seriously different.
I mean, potentially. I'm not super excited about anything in Gatecrash picking up post-redemption. There's nothing, like, besides something like Master Biomancer, which I think will go down, which would be good. Stuff that I've seen Zagana, actually, and Master Biomancer working together, you know, in EDH. Those seem really strong. Like, there's some good Simic stuff for EDH, which are already good color combinations before, but I'm not super excited about scooping anything in Gatecrash when it's cheap. post-redemption the way I am about RTR stuff. So, you can take your money and you can buy $2.50 copies of Aurelius Fury. I'm going to take that same amount of money and I'm going to buy Niv-Mizzets, and I think I'm going to be much happier for it. But, you know.
So, I have a bunch of those too.
Yeah. So, Corbin might not necessarily agree. That's two different strategies.
All right. Who wants, Ryan, you got one?
I do, in fact. Mine's another group of cards, actually, this week. This is a good one.
Think. Go ahead.
I think we should be picking.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Won't happen again.
I don't believe you.
You're
not convinced. anyway, no, I think that a card to be looking at, and not just a card, but a card I sold today, particularly on eBay, that I noticed sold for $20, and I looked up the retail number, and it was only $15. And granted, it was out of stock, but I think that this is not necessarily the card you want to go out and buy. The card I'm talking about is my old Anima, but really just a lot of these foil legends in general, and even the ones out of the shards block, because I thought they were so much cheaper because there were so many of them, but it seems like some of them are still in the $20 to $30 range. And you can trade for them from the retail numbers, which are typically like 75% of what they actually sell for on eBay. And it's been really interesting to me. I've been picking up as many as I can lately, and I've been making a lot of money on them, and they sell very quickly. So if you're a person who does eBay or really just doesn't necessarily use like retail as an outlet, I think it's a good thing to target right now.
You heard it here first, folks. You can get a lot of money selling foil mythics.
But you got to remember there was the shards packs, and
that's actually an excellent.
And this is one of those things, and like I said, it's for a trade. I'm not going to go out and buy $15 miles, but I will happily, if I'm in a trade someone for a $15 mile and go sell it on eBay for $20.
Because you could just bring up, hey, look, it's on SCG, it's $15.
Right, and everyone
TCG Med, let's extrapolate, say that's about $12, and then all of a sudden you have all the monies. And it's another excellent point to note that those. When you are trading for foil shards rares, they're probably a little bit less than you may think, just because those foil shards block packs really kind of saturated the market. There weren't a million of those packs.
But there were enough.
But there were enough that, like, a foil in a cattle is much less than you'd think. And, stuff like that. Any foil common or uncommon. Like, if you look at Relic of Progenitus, you'd think the foil would be a lot more, just because the non-foils insane right now.
Right, but there's a lot more of those in the packs. I agree. I agree the mythics are, obviously the thing to target there, but the fact that they're so much cheaper retail than they're selling in the real world, like, it's not typically what you see most of the time on eBay. A card is going to be, more expensive for...
But here's the deal with eBay. A lot of the times, the auction price... Say, I don't sell auction. I sell, buy it now.
But yeah, as do I.
The auction price informs the buy it now price, because it's like, well, someone paid this at auction, so I'm going to put my buy it now at this, and then the buy it now sells for that, and then people are like, well, a buy it now sold for that, so I'll put my buy it now price at that. So auctions have a tendency to inform the buy it now price. So even if it's 15 on Star City, the kind of people who are buying a foil Anima or Mael of the Anima aren't necessarily the same kind of people that are going to go to Star City or have even heard of it. They're going to be the kind of people that they're like, I want a foil EDH general. Where can I buy Magic singles online? Everybody knows about eBay, and the prices there sometimes, this is a rare case, I think, the prices there are sometimes higher than they are on a website like Star City. And I as much as I was giving Ryan grief, I think he was correct to point that out, that anytime there's a big discrepancy like that, and you can target it and trade for the retail value and make more on eBay, it's worth doing.
Yeah, going back to those shard specs, I remember getting burned on a foil Noble Hierarch, because the regular was, $20-$25, and I think I traded for the foil at $50, and I thought, hey, this is a legacy playable card, it's probably at least two times, and it was much less than that. So that is something to keep in mind, not just on those commons and uncommons, but on all points of that. But, it's going to become less and less pronounced as we move forward.
Oh, and if you want to be on the other side of the table from Corbin in that, and you just tell people, well, look, the non-foil is this, why don't we extrapolate that the foil's twice this? You could actually clean up on some of that stuff.
Absolutely. Like,
all right, so that does it for emails this week and picks of the week. So I guess the next thing we wanted to talk about is some of the spoilers from Theros, as it were.
Theros is kind of exciting. So someone asked us, do you think Theros will have Merfolk in it? And initially I was like, no, because... we've been wrong about the number of Merfolk a set is going to have before. Been very wrong, but what do you
Three
think
times,
about
it? I believe.
Theros seems like it can't decide if it's Greek or Roman. It seems like a very sort of that sort of region amalgamated thing. But there was, if you read Greek mythology, there were some merfolk, like the Sirens in the Odyssey, for example. I don't know if those are necessarily merfolk, but they were...
They could be.
They were sea-dwelling bitches, so it definitely... creature types that would be merfolk, or like I can't rule it out. I definitely can't. So I wouldn't hate seeing some merfolk in Theros.
I mean, what do you guys think about Theros and the Greco-Roman mythology as a set, as a block idea?
I think it's sweet. I'm super excited for it.
It reminds me of the old legends, too, because that was, you know, not necessarily the aesthetic they were going for before, and they had some, like, kind of had some Asian influences. Guys like Tetsuo Mizawa, like, clearly wasn't it. But, like, look at the expansion symbol for legends. It was, you know, it was like a pillar, like a Greco-Roman looking pillar, so... I think they could do this well. I think the Japanese theme set, the Kamigawa block, so I think they could do this well. I'm really not worried about it. And I, honestly, I like the Innistrad block, too. It's got a real, like, Germanic-type feel to it, so I think this will just be another good block.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for it. There's a lot of concepts to draw off of there. I can think of a lot of ways that, you know, they'll have a rich... background to draw from.
There's so much mythos associated with that, you know, because, like, you know, you have the Greek myths, you have the Roman myths, and bringing that stuff together, it's, plus it seems like they've got some really good ideas, you know, just for the creature types and that sort of thing, so, you know, there's people love minotaurs and stuff like that. There's just all kind of those creatures that have showed up in other sets that came from Greek and Roman myths, sphinxes and harpies and cyclopses and just all that kind of stuff. So I really think it's going to be pretty rich in creature types, and I'm pretty excited for it.
I'm waiting for them to use the first opportunity to troll us and put Thragtusk in the monster deck and make that one of the cards from Theos, and then put Sphinx's Revelation in there as well. So we can have two more years of those cards.
Or they could have the Sirens and have them be fish mutants.
That's true, too.
Just a laugh box full of Masters of the Pearl Trident.
Yeah. I mean,
Corbin, you don't sound very happy about that.
I mean, I have no faith in them anymore.
Corbin's a broken man.
Yeah. I got burned pretty hard on Gatecrash. I mean, like, there's a picture for Dragon's Maid, spoilers, I think it's a Simic Guild champion that it looks an awful like a merfolk, but it's probably going to be a fish mutant.
Yes, that seems incredibly likely. Because, as you know, Wizards makes it their business to mess with Corbin.
It's true, doesn't everybody? they're just in on the greatest troll of all.
Anyway, so I mean, I guess that we haven't probably even talked about Dragon's Maze that much, and that it's a maze, if you hadn't guessed, and there's going to be guild champions who are sent to the maze, and you know, that gives us some legendary creatures that will show up, and the first one is that was spoiled at PAX was Rurik Thar the Unbowed. It's a 4 colorless red-green 6/6 Vigilance Reach. It attacks each turn as Fable, and when a player casts a non-creature spell, it deals 6 damage to that player. So, are we going to get a bunch of Titans again? Is that what this is going to be? Dual Titans?
You know what? 6/6 for 6, 2 keyword abilities. The attacks each turn of Fable. Seems like, well, duh, why not? If you're in Gruul, why not just attack with him? Wow. Keeping them from wrathing you just seems absurd.
It's a lot of damage in those colors. Like,
I've seen a lot of people unhappy about this.
I mean, it's super expensive, but it definitely punishes people for answering it, you know, even if they have the removal spell. I don't know in those colors, but I hope, and I don't think this will be the case, I don't think that it'll be, you know, a cycle of 10... Titans, you know, the 6/6 for 6 with abilities. I think it's probably just the Gruul one.
I think it's just the one. I really think the 10 guild champions is, it's great because it's another 10 potential EDH generals. First off, you know, the foils of these are obviously going to be nuts. Like, honestly, I'd pick up the foils of the bad ones because the bad ones could be general someday. You know, because what's good in standard isn't necessarily going to be good in EDH, and what's bad in standard isn't necessarily going to be bad in EDH. So, you know, anything that says legendary, if you can get the foils cheap, I wouldn't shy away from that. I think since the Hell Vault, they've really done better every single pre-release. And I think the whole picking your champion, having him run the maze, that sort of thing, you know, the guild that runs the maze the fastest gets a prize. People are going to love that.
I mean, I'll be honest, it seems kind of silly to me, but...
But they don't care about Corbin when they're making the pre-release.
I understand.
About the people that only come out for that event.
Right.
And if they could bring more people out, the Hellvault brought more people out. The Choose Your Own Guild brought even more people than that out.
Yeah, and I mean, we've talked a lot. I guess it's been since the Hellvault, which, you know, now is almost a year or whatever. I'm sure we have a lot of new people. We talked a lot then about what they can do in these pre-releases to make them better, you know, from the stuff pre-Hellvault and all of this. And what I think we came to the conclusion then was you have to make it mean something. You know, it means something to choose your guild because that's what you're going to play. You get the guild back. That's what's going to happen. It meant something to choose Phyrexian or Mirren and back in Besieged. You know, with the Hellvault, it didn't really mean anything because everyone got in the Hellvault anyways. I mean, it didn't really impact what you were doing. And that's why I think Ravnica was so successful is because when you chose a guild, it really meant something. It wasn't just checking off little achievements on a card. So I think that Dragon's Maze seems to be heading in that direction as well.
It's like the competitive players really got into the whole picking your guild thing almost even more than the casual players because the big competitive players really publicly, like on Twitter and other social media, represented their guild. And I think it was a phenomenal success. I think it was even more successful than they imagined, and it was because they got the competitive players on board. And people that stopped playing around the last Ravnica block came back in droves, too. I talked to so many people at the pre-release, like, well, I haven't played since the last Ravnica, but when I heard they were bringing a Ravnica set back, you know, I figured whatever. So I really, you know, as snarky as we are as competitive players and people who don't even play Magic all that much anymore because there's a lot of value in trading, I'm not embarrassed to say I think the Dragon's Maze thing sounds kind of cool, and even if it doesn't appeal to me as much as it does to other people, I think casual players are really going to like it. So they really, really listened. Because when people were disappointed with the Hellvault, they kind of asked everybody, well, why are you disappointed? And I think they've implemented every suggestion that was reasonable that people made, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good pre-release. And giving us 10 new legendary creatures never hurts. You know, as somebody that's interested in the value of the game, I think you pick those up, and those are all potential generals.
Yeah, and I like the way that they're doing it, too, because you know among those 10, like, you're going to have an X amount of there for the casual crowd, X amount for the competitive crowd. And I think that some of them may even have a crossover. And it's really, like, it leaves open a lot of design space whenever you do large cycles like that, especially with legendary permits. And so I'm excited to see where they take the design space, because it seems like each one's probably going to be, you know, two abilities. I don't know if they'll put a drawback on all of them. Probably not, but I don't know.
It may just be I doubt there'll be drawbacks. Like, I'm going to say it could just be a loosely connected cycle. You know, you could see the Simic one that looks like a Merfolk. That could be some sort of low-cost playable Merfolk. But, like, I don't think they're going to be locked into this huge dude, lots of mana, lots of abilities necessarily.
Because that seems pretty gruely. Has to attack each turn, has, you know, some combat abilities. It seems pretty gruely to me. I don't think the Dimir one's going to have to attack each turn.
No, but I mean, it could have like an upkeep cost or something.
Yeah, some, you know, cool Gruul like or some cool Dimir like abilities. I really think they'll all be guild themed. You know, good flavor. They'll all be super useful for that sort of thing, and I think they'll have potential utility as generals, or at the very least, they'll be a card that you'll be glad you had in your deck. Because I know Ryan specifically definitely picked Dimir most of the times. We played in pre-release events just because he wanted that that Dimir creature.
The thing was absurd. It was the best one in the deck here by far.
Well, yeah, and you strapped a Gift of the Orzhova on it in the match you had to play against me and just smashed my face in.
That was fun.
14 Flying Lifelink, and I'm like, oh, that's cool. I've got a Treasury Thrall. So, definitely, like, people will probably pick their guilds just on the ability to have that creature in their deck, so... I'm looking forward to the pre-release.
Yeah, but, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I think that guy that they just spoiled, the Gruul one, is busted in EDH, so I don't even care for EDH, but doesn't he do the damage? So all you do is, if they play any four spells, they lose?
Yeah. If they play four spells, they die.
How does that work? Can you kill yourself with your own general damage?
Wait, but they have 40 life, then.
That's ever
happened. Yeah, but general damage is 21.
Oh, yes. That is a very good point.
Yeah. I don't know that that's ever come up before. You might just be able to 21 yourself with your own general and die. I don't know how that works.
That would be really funny. Yeah, I'm sure somebody's had their general stolen and been killed with it. But, like, have they been killed between 21 and 40, or has it just never been come in question? Because usually, like, if you're stealing someone's general, it's usually probably friggin' huge.
Are you casting insurrection and the game just sends for everybody on board?
Like, it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, insurrection. You're like, oh, here's 196 damage.
I want to make a deck that requires, ooh, I know, we can do, we can make,
oh god,
oh shoot, this me. General's, this
oh,
general's
no.
red green.
Don't brew like this. Not from the hip.
No, we have to have blue in the stack. We have to find a way to make this happen. Because we can cast it, we can play with Hive Mind.
Oh god.
Does that force them to cast a copy? Or to play a copy?
No, it copies it. They don't pass. Right? Oh god, I'm looking at that. Really?
Jason's losing it.
Completely derail the podcast, like.
It just copies it. They don't even cast it.
Oh, that's lame.
Oh.
Alright, fine. We're gonna find a way to break this guy.
No, we're not.
It's Bobo's little brother.
Have fun, Ryan.
He's already broken. Like, they take 6 damage to tear him. Like, he's already nuts.
Yeah. Especially if they're tearing him.
So, like, 10 years ago, you had spells that were quite good and creatures were okay. And gradually, to make the game accessible to newer players, they've made the creatures a lot better and the spells were sort of mediocre. So I don't know if the pendulum is going to swing in the other direction or what, but right now we have the creatures that are the best they've ever been. We have creatures that have competitive casting cost to power and toughness ratios, and they have insane abilities, like Thrag Tusk, Restoration Angel. And now we see this new guy, the Gruul Champion, so... this could mark the end of an era of insane creatures, or this could be just the new high watermark of, like, look, creatures are going to be nuts from now on, and that's how Magic's going to be played. But
I think a major part of it is the design space. I think you have a lot more area to design with a creature than you do most other most other spells. Like, an instant sorcery is going to do what it's going to do, and if you make it too complicated, new players aren't going to understand it. As opposed to a card like Thrag Tusk, like, you can read down the text.
Well, you can make a creature can do lots of things because a creature sticks around too. Permanents can do more things than spells can do. That's just, you know, that's the nature of it.
Plus, you already have the design space of they're going to be attacking and blocking, which adds a whole new element that no other card type has.
Right, and you do get a lot of design space out of that.
But these don't even make sense on instants and sorceries.
Right.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
You guys have anything else you want to touch on?
Other than the blowout of my last opponent in Modo getting blown out with Boros Charm because he tried to rapid hybridization one of my cards at end of turn.
Thanks, Ryan.
Yeah, no problem. I actually didn't realize that card destroyed. I thought they sacrificed, and I realized that just getting a free 3/3 when my opponent played a spell was pretty good.
Yeah, especially when your opponent's playing rapid hybridization.
That card's actually fine.
Anyways.
It destroys the bomb.
You guys were wondering why Marcel gave us the intro and then, you know, disappeared. He wasn't able to be with us tonight, but we knew you guys needed your fix of Marcel, so we had him stick around to record the intro before he headed out.
I'm not going to say why he's not joining us, but it rhymes with Rexplosive Ryaria.
On that note, guys, we'll see you guys next week.
No, we won't, Corbin. We are going to play a little game that we like to call What's It...
Dude, what the hell?
I was taking a drink and you made me laugh.
Ryan, come on.
I blame Jason.
You blame me for being funny? Well, you should have known.
Well, I'm sorry.
Turns out I've known you for almost a decade and I've been funny before now.
Yeah, anyway. Usually when you're in person, you try not to do it while I'm taking a drink.
No, I definitely try to do it when you are taking a drink.
Well, you succeeded. I split it all down the front of myself.
Tried so hard to get us back on track.
All right, anyway, what's it worth?
We have to play a little game that we like to call What's It Worth?
Well, what's it worth?
Possibly end the podcast without doing that as much as Corbin wants us to, so he can go... I don't know what Corbin's in a hurry to go do. Probably eat ice cream.
I mean, I forgot about what's it. All right. I assume since you are getting us into this, Jason, you have something in particular?
I have one locked and or loaded.
I thought you might.
All right. So, guys, Cool Stuff, Inc., for the pricing. What can we expect to pay when they're in stock for a near-mint copy of Mr. Tetsuo Umezawa?
Oh, God.
Okay, I'll read you his abilities that might help. He costs a red, a black, and a blue, making him sweet Grixis colors. He's a 3-3 for 3, which is pretty nuts already. You pay a red, 2 black, and a blue, and tap him. Destroy target tap creature or target blocking creature. And also, Tetsuo may not be a target of an enchant creature spell.
Is there a lot of things?
Well, you can't put an arrest on Tetsuo Umezawa, because I know how much arrest gets played in the
EDH. No, but prison term does.
Fate's Fetters might. I don't know.
Yeah. Prison term is actually worth money because of EDH and because they're casual, so.
I really like prison term.
You know about his jitte, though.
Fine. How much would you pay for prison term?
He doesn't even have a jitte in the picture. That always confused me. He has, like, every other weapon known to man, if I remember correctly, but he doesn't have a jitte.
He's got a bow and arrow. He's got a wakizashi. It looks like he's got a katana. And something in his left hand that could be an arrow.
I think it's an arrow.
An arrow. So he's all, Julie Barrow did a good job of painting what looks like, you know, your classic Japanese style painting of a guy who's got everything under the sun but a jitte.
For some reason, he looks like he has Mickey Mouse ears to me, I always thought. So I just thought of him as a fat.
He does kind of look like that.
He just looks like a fat Mickey Mouse to me, carrying around a bunch of weaponry. But anyway, card has got to be like $25.
Yeah, it's from Legends. I mean, like, I don't know, 20.
Okay, when he's in stock on Cool Stuff, Inc., you can expect to pay $18.99.
All right.
You have one played copy for $17, so... I'm assuming if they get more near mint back in stock, they'll put them around $18.99. You know, that's maybe you guys are extrapolating from of legends like Angus McKenzie, but I totally nailed you. I knew you would think this was more than it was. I got Corbin
dollars. All those legends are.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's. I think Gwendolyn DeCourcy is probably the Grixis color general you want to be playing.
Right.
Sure.
All right, I've got one, and you guys probably know this, but everyone at home might not. Cool Stuff, Inc., a foil Liliana of the Veil.
Oh, man, that really went up this week. I want to say they are 150, because I know that they're 150 a lot of places. And I got one in a collection for $70 like 2-3 months ago. I was happy to get that 70.
I mean, are they even going to be in stock in Cool Stuff? They just jumped. I don't know if they're going to be in stock anywhere. Cause it's one of those cards like that would get bought out quick. I mean, I guess a hypothetical price sounds like 150. Like, what's the regular ones are up to 70 now, right?
I've seen the regular ones be 50.
Higher, is it like?
But to answer you guys' question, it actually is not in stock.
I don't know what the regular ones even worth.
Oh, that's a great selection, Corbin.
Well, like you said, I wanted to highlight that it is, in fact, up from, to 130, 150 range, which is something a lot of, like you said, it's pretty recent, so a lot of listeners might not know.
Yep. 3 months ago, I got one in a collection, I was like, oh my god, these are 70? I'm so happy to sell this for 70. And now I feel like a silly goose.
yeah, I mean, this basically what happened is this got played in Legacy. I guess the John deck broke out in Legacy, and that,
Turns out Punishing Jund is, probably, as much as I hate to admit this, it's probably the better Punishing Grove deck when compared with Maverick right now. Because playing Thoughtseize and Imdotorok and Bloodbraid Elf makes a little bit better against the combo decks, I feel, than playing Hate Bears, which they can just, Chain of Vapor or whatever. So you'll like it or hate it, and I would still want to play Maverick, but like it or hate it, the Punishing Jund deck is quite good, and it's made a lot of those cards that are in that deck spike. Everything from Badlands to Thoughtseize between Modern and Legacy. Thoughtseize is quite expensive. It's made even post banning in Modern, Bloodbraid Elf is still a card that's in high demand because any card that's good enough to be banned in Modern is probably good enough to get played in Legacy. So anything that's in that Punishing Jund deck, you can expect to go up, which is why I said last week I'm buying Foil Abrupt Decay. So, the 150 on Liliana seems reasonable for right now.
All right. Ryan, what do you got?
I'm actually going to play the role of Marcel this week and give you a Modo card. I want to know what the Magic Online price of Snapcaster Mage is.
The what?
Magic Online price of Snapcaster Mage.
Man, who even knows? They play with fake Monopoly money over there on Modo.
$6.
No, it's not dollars, man. It's tickets.
Six ticks.
Six ticks, huh?
Three ticks. I don't know. So I'm going to... He went super low. I'm going to go super high. One of us is going to be right.
It is 7 tickets, so yes, you're very close.
Yeah.
Why? Snapcast are not a thing. Is because there's no legacy on Moto?
No, it's because it's a rare, and it's like $6 for a rare is very expensive.
This garbage rare mythics is insane online, I know that.
Tickets, Ryan. I think you'll find.
Tickets, I apologize. It is 6 tickets.
But, yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's good or bad, you know, for, like, because the way you get all these rares.
Magic Online, that's very good. I mean. Well,
right, but, like, your mana base and stuff is cheap when you play Magic Online, but then, you know, the mythics get absurdly expensive. So, you know, I guess it's just a shifting of the cost.
Well, that's all fascinating stuff, guys.
But anyways, yeah, I mean, so that should actually wrap us up there.
Ryan Bouchard playing the poor man's Marcel this week with the photo price.
Well, thanks. I mean, it seems like a card that, you know, there's a huge discrepancy. Most of the mythics on Moto go way up, and then, you know, they're close to the real-life price, if not higher sometimes. But the rares are very usually way lower. Like, I know you can get Shocklands for as low as 2 tickets on there. So.
Yeah, and I would say the fact that, like, Snapcaster's playing Legacy in paper, you know, probably really helps its price, seeing as how it's a non-mythic. Whereas they're not really being that much of a legacy crowd or meta on online, seems like that would, you know, basically just its standard playability would affect its price. And 7 tickets, I guess, is probably just about right for something that's only played in standard. But who knows, I bet Boros Reckoner is way more than 7 tickets, so what do I know?
Apparently we know nothing.
Well, everyone at home, thanks for listening. We should be back next week with 100% more Marcel.
As much as
I take that back, it'll be like 98%, huh? Because we did get the intro.
That's right.
It would work the other way around. If we got an intro and something from him, it would be more like 1,000% Marcel.
That's not how math works at all.
Yes, it is, because we did get Marcel this week, and we're getting a lot more of him next week.
Ryan's right. Damn it. Shit.
That is how math works. Thank you.
I hope Marcel cuts this
out. I might be as bad as you guys at English, or I might be way worse than you guys at English, but I am better at math. Victory.
So we got, you know, 1% of a podcast of Marcel this week. So if we have 100% of a podcast next week, I guess 1,000%, bear that out. Congrats, Ryan, on the math.
Yeah. Please don't. Please, I hate when Ryan's right. Anyways,
it's okay, thanks, Corbin. We hate when you're right, too.
You guys should FOGO bet on how much of a percentage Marcel returns.
Gosh.
Deal. Snap in.
We should have a B-dubs bet, and if either one of you wins, we don't have to go to stupid B-dub ever again.
I agree.
You guys are haters. All right, everyone at home, thanks for listening. Make sure to write in, give us your feedback, especially if your feedback is about how delicious Buffalo Wild Wings is.
Or not. Also acceptable.
Or how good it is to have a wife who's capable of cooking. Unlike Corbin, apparently.
Whoa. Marianne is going to be very upset when she hears this. But
doesn't hear this podcast.
You're good to go. She's actually a great cook, but I'm on the run a lot, so I eat out quite a bit.
This is all really ventilating stuff. I'm glad our listeners are... I'm sure they're glad.
This.
All right, well, we're done. Marcel, you can cut all this off or make everyone at home listen to it and laugh at us. Either way.
This will make a good intro to the podcast.
Indeed.
Better than last week when my wife talked about poops and or farts before the podcast.
It's true. We're giving him a lot of material to work with here.
This is all good, usable stuff right here.
Always. It's all we ever produce on this show.
I don't know if we're going to smoothly segue into cutting it off. He's just going to...
I sure hope he doesn't put this in here.
I kind of felt that way about this whole entire...
He's going to troll us and put the poop into the podcast.
Well, listeners, if you're still listening, we'd like to thank you for joining us on another exciting episode of the Brainstorm Brewery. I've been Jason Ault, your host, and my co-hosts, Ryan Bouchard and Corbin Hosler. Thank you for listening.
I hope he actually cuts most of that off.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com. coolstuffinc.com. Show your support.